I'm afraid it's going to happen no matter what you do about it, friend. It's going to happen. Bring it up there, big Jim, Jim, Jim. Oh, oh, that was great. And all, here's the star of our show, me. And I'm about to, if you don't mind, since this is the beginning of the week.
Hey, what a fantastic day, huh? Oh, man, I'm beginning to feel the creative juices flowing through me like the vast river Nile
flowing down to the heart of Africa itself, giving sustenance to the land, to the world, and bringing the word to those around him less fortunate. Yes. Philosophy, away for me. I am fantastic, and I'm moving on with the word. Oh, yes, I feel all those creative juices pouring out like a grass stream. Keep the second cut there on the machine, Jane. Please, if you will. That's kind of nice. If you're curious what that was, that was a record that I brought back from Nigeria. Yeah, it's a Nigerian recording.
Well, here it is. Yeah. Well, it doesn't sound the way you think a Nigerian record would sound, but that's the way Nigerian music really does sound. That's pop time. Oh, by the way, speaking of the pop world, it's taken over on all sides. We would like to salute the new school. According to a news note we just received here, the new school now offers a course in pornography. It's called Porno 101. And we'd like to salute the new school for that step forward.
They've been teaching that down at the American Legion on Wednesday nights and the smokers for years, and they finally caught up with Slavus Americanus.
Oh, you know.
But they make it sound so ugly, so deadly and dull. You know, they call it the inner erotic personal relationship. Investigation into the film exposition of said into erotic personal relationship. Leave it to the academic world to make the most fantastic stuff in the world sound, you know, like yesterday's Jell-O.
You know, with all the zing of vanilla Jell-O in a hot sun. But Porno 101, I can just see the professor, you know, somehow. That's, I can see, you can't just see the how they're going to teach this thing. And naturally, everything will have to be done with, as typical in the academic world. It'll have to be done with a straight face. You know, no way can the professor say, hey, listen, gang, tonight, hey, close the door, will you? Come on. The student there in the back, please close the door and make sure the lock is closed.
And, all of you over by the window there, pull the shades down. Oh, we got a goodie for you tonight. Oh, my God. We just got this. This one is from Denmark. It's fantastic. Yeah, all right. Turn the lights down. Okay, here we go. No, it's not going to be that way.
going to be that way. No. I can just see the professor say, some of these have soundtracks on them. So give me a little soundtrack music. Yeah, cut to just quiet in the background.
Yeah,
play, boys. Yeah, just quiet. No, steady in there. Give me the music. All that talk is not going to do us any good. Come on. Give me the music, Jimmy. I'd love to hear that talking. But this is not a Nigerian porno film. There we go. Yes, yeah, you see the music coming away. I see. On comes the credits, you know. The film under discussion tonight, gang, is, student, is The Orgy Up in Lil's Room. Now, as you know, last week we discussed in great detail the origin, the basic Greek beginnings of the orgy in Western civilization. And tonight we are going to see a film, a cinema effort, which describes an orgy in extreme detail. Of course, this is all part of the technical. Now, you'll notice this gentleman who seems to be entering the room here, you'll notice that he is wearing black stockings. Anybody here have any idea of the significance of the black socks? You'll notice he is wearing a mustache and black glasses. Now, the lady who was emerging from the door in the corner there appears to have what looks like, at this point, the film is a little fuzzy here. Please, would you stop the film for a moment? Yes, that is a feather boa. That's the only thing she's wearing there. And, of course, the feather boa has its origins in the early Egyptians. And, hold it there, at that point. Hold it. Thank you, James. Thank you. But the idea of porno. Incidentally, you get 3 credit hours for that. It's in the humanities division down there at the new school. And where else would it be? And I kind of like the way things are going. You know, have you ever had a feeling that Attila the Hun is now in control of our cultural life somewhere? The spectral shade of Attila the Hun. He would have loved it. I'm serious. You see what I'm saying, Jim? There's a lot to be learned in this world. This is WOR New York. Hi, George. Yes, sir. An RKO General Station. Hey, listen. The one question I got to ask. Did you see our ad in the New York Times over the weekend? Have you got the old New York Times over the weekend, you know, the Sunday Times? Take out the theater section, friend, and you'll find our ad for the Carnegie Hall. Oh, it's kind of great, you know, to see stuff there. Right there, you know, on that ad right there next to, you know, right there, the official type. You know, David Merritt just takes out an ad every week in the Times, even when he doesn't have any running. You know, once in a while, he just puts the thing, don't forget David. You know, Merritt is still here, you know.
Good.
Excellent. Just a minute here. No, I don't want to rot your head anymore. I'll tell you this, though, speaking of rotting the head, I just, it's a philosophical question here I'd like to bring up. The question is this, roughly. Do you share the rest of your fellow man's desire to get something for nothing? I'm asking you a serious question. I mean, really, seriously. I mean, I don't think there's a man with soul so dead who never proved them. Self had said, oh, God, I wish I had hit the double jackpot. And the money had started coming out of the ventilators and squirting out of the air conditioning units, and there'd be fantastic chicks with enormous, you know what, strolling through my office demanding to be shown some attention just because I'm more and I'm cute. That's all right. You want it for nothing, right? Yeah, well, that's a, for example, you, well, look, the urge to want something for nothing is an age-old human failure. Now the squirrels do not share this with us. The squirrel knows, he knows very well. But if he's going to have acorns in mid-January, you better start collecting acorns somewhere around July. Do you agree with this? He's not going to hit the double quinella acorn jackpot somewhere around December, and, you know, acorns are going to start coming down out of the sky. No. Man, he wants something for nothing. Like the other day, I'm listening to one of these all-news stations, and I hear this guy running for mayor. Now, you see, the chief premise upon which almost all political campaigns are based is to offer the average walking around slobberoonie something for nothing. Now, it can, if you get too definite about it, you're liable to get shot down. You have to offer him things in general for nothing. You never come right out and say, I'm going to offer, as I stand here before all of you, anybody named Smith in his town is going to get a free Buick Electra. Anyway, that way lies disaster. You agree with that? Because there's going to be a lot of guys named Bullard, Steinbrunner, Axelrod, you know, who are going to raise up and cause all kinds of confusions. And you never have to identify the group, you think, that you're going to give something for nothing. So you say things like this. I believe that members of the minority in this town, each one, a 17-inch color television set provided free by the city. I believe that for every... Well, now, you see, you're not identifying the minority because everybody in this town thinks of himself as a minority. And, in fact, he is. Each person in his own right believes that he is beleaguered. He is surrounded by organized groups. Even if he belongs to 7 organized groups, which are dedicated to the premise that they are really the only one that represents the true will of the people. Remember that. But see, I'm giving you a little technique too. If you're going to run for office, you got to be very careful. Now, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Organize the minorities, everybody gets a 17-inch color. Now, on the other hand, what he has to say, now, like you're there, I'm listening to the news, and this is what the guy said. I thought this was kind of great. I believe in law and order. I want to tell you that this town is being taken over by the criminals. It's being taken over by the hood. And a previous administration played handy-pandy with all them guys. And I want to say this. I want to tell you that law and order is taking over the city. I want to see 3 cops on every corner. I want to see a squad car on every block. Maybe 3-4 of them. Law and order is important. Now, to the next thing that I am standing for, I am standing for lower taxes. I want to tell you this. Nobody can afford to live in this town because of the taxes. The taxes are gotten out of hand. So I'm going to say, cut the taxes by 1/3. I see. Slobberoonie is getting something for nothing. More cops, more squad cars, less taxes. Now, how this is going to be achieved has to be handled very delicately because some sore head in the crowd, you know, like, you know, one of the reporters that saw, Mr. Candidate, how do you feel that you're going to be able to give us 3 times more policemen at the same time cut the taxes by 1/3? How are you going to do that? Well, I am glad, Gabe, that you asked that question. That question has been asked many times. And I'm glad to take this public opportunity to answer that question. We are going to stop waste and corruption in this city if all the money that we just waste run out the water, right out the window, if all that money was put into the police force, we would have a police force that just wouldn't stop. We could have 25, maybe 40,000 more cops here in this town. I am going to stop corruption.
Well, now, that's the way to answer a question like that, see. Now, if the next guy gets up and says, Mr. Candidate, you just said that you're going to stop corruption. Do you have anything in mind? Do you have any particular corruption that you would like to stop in mind? That's going to save us all this money. Would you please answer that question, please, sir?
Well, thank you very much, Gabe. I'm glad you brought that question up. At this time, I am not at liberty to divulge the names of the malefactors who have been systematically bilking the city of its hard-earned tax money. The people of the city of New York have contributed their taxes willingly, but these malefactors, which I am not at the liberty at this time to designate, and most of them are from out-of-town contractors, people which do not appear on the city payrolls. We are not at liberty to divulge this. However, when our new administration begins, you will be hearing plenty from my anti-corruption squad, which I am forming, headed by my brother-in-law, who is a famous anti-corruption fighter. As a matter of fact, we already have put in nomination for his assistant, my cousin, who, as you know, has established a fantastic record among anti-pollution and anti-corruption peoples all over the country. Are there any other questions here now?
See, you've got to cover all bases. Very important. You realize that? The slob wants something for nothing, doesn't he? Well, I mean, I include myself, don't you? I mean, how many times have you sat behind a cab driver, see? And a typical cab driver, you're riding up 6th Avenue, and you now turn off 6th Avenue, you turn right, we'll say, on 30th Street. You're right down there in the heart of the heavy traffic area, see? And the cars are blocked one after the other, see? There's guys parking triple, quadruple up ahead of you. And the cab pulls into, this is a typical slob looking for something for nothing, see? The cab pulls into 30th Street. You are heading east. And the cab driver then sees this fantastic mass of traffic up ahead, see? And there's guys triple parked. There's cabs unloading. He says, oh, yeah, look at that slobs. Boy, I'll tell you, one thing about these people, nobody gives a damn about nobody else. You know what he ought to do? I'll tell you what they ought to do. Look at it. Look at that meter ticking over. I didn't want you to get held up like that. I'll tell you this. What they ought to do is they ought to put a tow truck on every one of these streets. And the minute some car stops, they ought to just simply tow them right out and dump that damn car to Jersey swamps. I'm just telling you, this is getting to be too much. One day this town is just going to be tied up. Nobody's going to get through, right? Oh, man. With this guy in the office, with this guy at mayor, you know, what do you expect with the mayor we got? I mean, this guy here is such a slob. I'll tell you, this mayor, you know, this mayor goes around and rides a bicycle in the park. He's got all these little oopsie-poopsie things with the balloons over at the museum. And what the hell does he know about the traffic on 30th Street, huh? You think he ever rides a cab? Hell no. He's got himself one of these cities, what do they call them, limousines, something like that, a big caddy, you know, with a guy's out in front with a light flashing. He don't have to sit here like, look at that idiot up there in front there. Look what that guy's doing. He's been sitting there 5 minutes just chewing a fat. Okay, now, there. You got one side of him. See, he sounds like he's really worried about traffic. Now, how many times have you sat in that same cab, and the cab stops at the corner of, say, 3rd Avenue and 30th Street? you know, the cars are lined up behind you. They're all heading towards the Midtown Tunnel. And the cab driver turns around, and he stops right in the middle of the street. He says, okay, he says, all right, that's $1.50 on a meter. $1.50 on a meter. Hey, what do you think of the Mets? I'll tell you. Hey, you know, they look like they're coming along. Yeah. Gee, I ain't got no change for five. No, hell, we'll have to say, listen, do you mind if I get out and run into the bar here? Got to go to the John anyway. I'll just run into the bar here and change the $5 bill. You wait, right? I'll be right out. And boom, the horns are back. And he comes back. Oh, shut up, you guys! What the hell do you think you're hollering at? Shut up, you guys! Don't give me that business. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I wish I could ship you like my sister Kitty. She just ships and shakes it. Yeah, like jelly on a plate. I wish I could ship you like my sister Kitty. Yeah, like jelly on a plate. Ba ba dee, ba da 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 doo. Yeah, oh, look at her shimmy like jelly on a plate. I wish I could. Oh, thank you. That was very nice. I don't know why we did that, but it's very nice. I wish I could shimmy like my sister Kate. Shake and shimmy like jelly on. Listen, one more. The urge to get something for nothing is always with us. And I have with you here, I'd like to put this into the exhibit, Senator, please. I'd like to put this on the record here.
Speaking of getting something for nothing, it's a catalog from one of the big mail order houses, which shall go unnamed, going into my file of significant trivia to be dug up in the year 2500 so they know what the hell it was really like at this time. This takes care of the New York Times Book Review supplement. Here's, right here, you can see it looks beautiful. And the headline shows this guy looking very proud. He's pointing at his bookshelves. And the bookshelves are filled with magnificent buckram-bound volumes, bound in all kinds of great leathers. And you can just, a very official library. You know the kind of library you always see David Niven in? Or C. Aubrey Smith. The kind of library that even has a little, you know, a great thing to have in your library. It has a little ladder that runs around on a track, you know, in case of a serious album you want to get up to the top there. Well, you can now get from this mail order place, here's the headline, have a complete bound classical library without troublesome books. Well, that's been one of the problems for years. A lot of people would like to have a great library, but then all those books are around, you know? You realize this. I mean, you know, you have to... Because sometimes some horses, you know what, is going to say to you, oh, Vanity Fair by George Thackeray. Gee, that's very interesting. You remember, he's going to look up and he'd say, oh, for heaven's sakes, the Pickwick Papers by George. Don't you believe that Sam is one of the greatest people you've ever met in your life? And you won't know who the hell Sam is. But you, and you're really up against it if the actual book is there. You'll have to start ad-libbing very fast. So now you can get a complete bound library without troublesome books. Impossible, you say? I'm reading to you the brilliantly written copy. Although people of that type, you know, I don't know whether they could get this far down in the copy. Although I imagine, if they were, I can see their lips moving as they read it. Impossible, you say? Oh, not with these fabulous library panels. They are real, superb quality book bindings, framed in walnut-finished wood and attached to any wall instantly with self-contained super tape. Decorate it then. Impress friends with the classics. Have a row or do a wall. In fact, you can do several rooms. And be fantastically literate. 10 different models available. Each is 11 inches by 25 inches. And you can get them in the general library panel. You know, just general stuff. Or you can have a complete set of the English classics going back to the late 8th century. Or you can have a representative selection of late 19th century and 20th century writings, including several well-known poets. I think that's kind of nice. Without the key word is troublesome. Troublesome books. Now, that's the slob at work. See, he wants something for nothing. He wants to have this the appearance of literacy without, hurting your eyes, being embarrassed by reading an entire book and not knowing what the hell they're talking about from one end to the other. That's embarrassing. I've been continually confronted with the psychological and the philosophical problems of myself personally attempting to get something or nothing. For example, practically hardly a day goes by here, but what I do not get in the mail, a letter, usually typewritten, and it says, Dear Sir, usually it says, Dear Sir, it says, Dear Sir, do not break the good luck chain of this letter. General C. L. Watanabe of El Alamein, Africa, did not break the chain and within 2 weeks was the recipient of $20,000 in cash. Do not break the chain. Put your name at the bottom of the letter and send it on with 10 copies to friends of yours and have them put, and at the end of that time, you will receive unexpected good fortune. Do not break the chain. Did you ever get one of those? Everybody has. Who were the dildocs that send them on? I have never sent any on, have you? Not once. I usually make paper airplanes out of mine when I get them. They make very good airplanes. I mean, but yet they persist in coming. There has to be somebody send them because they come with stamps. Somebody's sending those out. There must be a world headquarters of slobism that sends that kind of stuff out, you know? Because
I have. This is a variation, you know, on the chain letter. Did you ever have any experience with the chain letter? Well, if there was ever a guy, ever in this life, who wanted something for nothing, it was my old man. I mean, he figured one day he was at the jackpot. And he figured, you know, his answer to any and all scoffers was, well, what do you mean? You never know.
You never know. Absolutely never know. After all, somebody has to win.
Well, he's right. Up to a point. And so he never stopped. And so every couple of days, the local newspaper, for example, would have a big thing that says, win $50,000, match the president's noses.
The following pictures contain the dissembled noses of 32 American presidents. Match those noses correctly, and you will be in line to win $50,000 and 250 other great cash awards, plus a trip to Bermuda. You've seen those.
You haven't.
You have lived a very sheltered life.
You mean you haven't seen the contest that says join the dotted line?
Yes, you've seen that one.
Well, all right, that's a variation of the same thing. And so the old man was always joining these things. And every couple of days, he would come home with a chain letter, see? And the chain letter always started out with the same. It says, send a dollar, or a dime, or whatever it was. It says, send a dollar to the name on the top of the list. Put your name on the bottom of the list, and then give this letter to 10 of your friends. And have them send out copies, putting their name on the bottom. You must give it to 10 friends. And at the end of 2.5 weeks, you will receive a minimum of $27,942 if the chain is not broken. Act now. So he would take the letter. He would put a dollar in it. He would fold it up and send it up. And we never heard another thing from him. Well, there were always rumors floating around of various other guys that hit the fantastic jackpot. I mean, guys who other guys knew. As far as I knew, my old man never actually knew a guy that did it. But he would come home and say, hey, let me tell you, you know, you're laughing about that chain letter. I said, my mother, you know, always was putting them down, see. And, you know, with the chain letter thing. So he would come home with these great stories. He'd say, hey, you were laughing? You were laughing about the chain letter? Well, let me tell you a little story I heard today at the office. Sherby met a man down at the Bluebird Tavern, whose cousin has now retired and is living in Spain. In 1 week, he received over $95,000 in $5 bills because of a chain letter. Oh, and you're laughing. I could be that very lucky person. We certainly could use some new pillowcases around here, couldn't we? Well, that's the way it would go, see? So my mother, you know, this would go on week after week after week. And one day, Mrs. Bruner came over. Now, Mrs. Bruner weighed, 700, 800, maybe 900 pounds. And she was always reading True Romances and Photoplay. These were her two twin gods of literature. And she came over one day, came into the kitchen, and gave my mother a long story about a chain letter. This was a chain letter that somehow scored with my mother. It was the first time my mother fell into the chain letter bit. And she was so afraid that my old man was going to discover it. Because, you know, she'd be putting down the chain letter. See? And how I knew this, it was on a Saturday morning that Mrs. Bruner came over. The old man was gone somewhere. And they talked for about, maybe half an hour. And I'm hanging around the kitchen. I heard the whole thing, see? And Mrs. Bruner says, I want you to, I just love to have you take this one because I sent some myself. And I have to give 10 other people listen. You're the only one I know who, I've given one to my sister and my cousin. So my mother took the chain letter, and she, that afternoon, without saying a damn thing, sent away the chain letter. She went out, immediately she calls up on the phone. She calls all her sisters. She had about 5 sisters, and they all had cousins and all that stuff. And she's rid of the 10 mothers like that, see? And nobody's the wiser. She never figured anything was going to happen, because of poor Mrs. Bruner, she did it, see? Well, about 3 days later, it took about 3 days. It was fantastic.
About 3 days later, the mailman comes struggling up our walk. He's struggling. He's got a gigantic sack full of mail, you know, and he's really bugged. I remember Mr. Stanford, the mailman, comes up. He says, what is all this, you know? And my mom says, oh. And she takes all these letters, and she's got a stack full of letters in the living room. Of course, she's really scared now because the old man's going to find out. It's like, well, yeah, she hid him down the basement. I'll have to tell you what she had to send away. She did not send money. She did not send a dollar, because sending a dollar would have caused a lot of hollering around the house. She sent a wash rag. Send one wash rag to the name at the top of the list, and you can be the recipient of a fantastic new collection of wash, or a new wash rag you had to send. Not an old one, a new wash rag. Well, my mother, at the end of 3 days, had gotten about 400 wash rags. Fantastic. They were coming in from all over the country. California. They were coming in from Utah, from Maine, from Idaho. She's getting wash rags mailed in the mail. Well, you can't hide 400 wash rags very easily, especially new wash rags. Not around a house where, you know, we had a total of 5 wash rags to our name. Well, by the end of the second week, you won't believe this, my mother has received over 2,000 wash rags. By the end of the fourth week, she is now approaching. It was unbelievable. We had wash rags in the living room. We had wash rags piled up in the bathroom. We had them piled up under the kitchen sink. And before it was over, my mother had received, by actual count, 17,120 wash rags. Now, think carefully about this, friends. You're just listening to this story, but this is a true story. 17. Do you have any kind? Do you have even the faintest idea of how many wash rags 17,000 wash rags is? I mean, you pile 10 wash rags up and you got a lot of wash rags. Pile 20 up and you got too many. Pile 50 up and you're ready to go into business. We had wash rags. My mother was putting them in the pillowcases and sticking them under the basement stairs. Wash rags, 17,000 wash rags. Well, when my old man found out about this, because he couldn't, you know, he'd sit there in the wash rags. I remember he put it so nicely into perspective. He says, I see no reason why we should have to win on the wash rag chain letter, and we can't get a single dollar back on a real chain letter. My mother got a little afraid after a while. The police were going to come. Chain letters, by the way, were illegal. And she was afraid Mr. Sanford, the mailman, was going to turn her in for running an illegal chain letter dealing in wash rags. She had 17,000 wash rags. And 2 weeks ago, just 2 weeks ago tonight, I called her, you know. But it came up. I said, hey, Ma, I said, still got some of those wash rags? Whew, I got wash rags. She still has over 12,000 wash rags. After all, how many wash rags can you use in a lifetime? And my mother's not the type that throws wash rags away. Well, you never know, friends. You may hit the jackpot. You just never know.